Okay, what an exciting day. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Eretz Chemda to Vaul Chava, is daf Samachet. We're starting a brand new perek today called Behema HaMikasha. And it sounds like that is some kind of brand new topic, right? But it's not. We're smack bang still in the middle of Elul Treifas, in a way. What this perek is an introduction of a brilliantly marvelous new idea of Treifa, which we've discussed in many times. And that is the entirely abstract idea of Treifa. And that abstract idea is that anything that is not within its natural environment, this is not a biological environment necessarily, it might be, but remember the idea, the last thing that we learned was all about environments in which little buggies are considered to be in their natural environment when they walk up the side of the bottle. Then the question is, what about the overall din of Treifa, Rabosa? The incredible abstraction of Treifa is the recognition that all things have a context. That context may be an organic context. It may be a halachic context. And so on. But that context is definitive of its presence in the universe and its ability to be there and to survive. So when the Torah says, basar basadeh treifa, what does the basadeh have to do with anything? So that the point is, basadeh means no mechitzot. Something is wide open. When something is wide open, it's vulnerable. And there's a sense, therefore, of basar basadeh, by definition, being treifa. What would this mean? Well, one of the classic examples is the halacha that we've had, that if basar kedesh is yotzei chutz l'mikomo, it's not only usur, it's actually a regular treifa. So that if, let's say, a basar chatas was taken out of the azara, the meat becomes treifa with the same exact law. Basar basadeh treifa. It's not a new type of treifa. Now, there are biological contexts as well. Let's take a case where you have a fetus comfortably sitting in a womb. That womb is the biological context for the life of this fetus, correct? Now, suppose the fetus sticks out in the middle of a difficult birth. There's a sticking out of one of the limbs. Maybe this is malpositioned, and because of that, the animal is presenting with its feet first, whatever the situation is, and it sticks out those feet. The moment those feet go out of the womb, while the rest of the fetus is in the womb, they are out of context, because that womb is what provides the life of that fetus. And therefore, even if they bring those feet back into the womb, and in the end it's delivered by Caesarean, whatever, it is permanently treifa. Now, that is a completely abstracted idea of treifa that has nothing to do with being pulled apart. It has to do with the innate vulnerability of being outside of your context. And that makes it permanently treifa. It's very similar to the extension of the idea of incipient treifas when it comes to things that are going to cause a penetration of a hole in the lung and so on, right? So even though currently there's no problem, we see the treifas itself as a profound vulnerability. That means that this perek is actually introducing not a new topic. It's introducing a new sort of abstracted and a marvelously pure idea of treifas. Now, we'll begin, but we're going to talk about all of the other type of treifas that are outside of their mechitza as well, even including those things that have to do with hegdash, as we'll see. But our first is the clear-cut biological treifas of a fetus that is not fully in the womb. And that's why we introduced this here. We're going to see that we're going to get back to other aspects of treifas later, so we have not really moved on from Elul Treifas. We've moved deeper into Elul Treifas, in a sense. So, with that in mind, there's one additional halacha that we need to review before we understand this Mishnah. And that is, remember that when the Torah gave the list of the various things to eat, it said, Ba-behema. Ba-behema, we understood that anything which was the split hooves and the shesa-shesa. So what is the list that we have? Where is that list relevant? Ba-behema. What do you mean, Ba-behema? Of course, we're talking about behemoth. Ba-behema, we read as if it's saying, Ko-behema, shesa-shesa, whatever, Ko-behema, Ba-behema, you can eat. Now that means that if there is a fetus inside of a mother and you shech the mother, then you are allowed to eat that fetus because it is a behema, ba behema. And anything that was found inside of that behema is kosher. Remember, we had this before when we spoke about, what about if there's an internal organ? What about if the spleen is cut out and it's left inside of the animal? Does that make it a kosher food when you shech the animal? We discussed that before, and we said this is only a behema, ba behema. It has to be the organism, the fetus in the behema. But if you leave out the tchol, let's say, or a liver, whatever, that is not going to be kosher. So that's how we understood that before. So now once we have those two things clear, the concept of tarfas in a chutz l'mechitzosa and the concept of behema ba behema, we can now read the Mishnah and understand it very simply. Behema nekashe lele. So let's imagine a situation where we've got a difficult labor. And in a difficult labor, all sorts of difficult things happen, including sometimes the need to actually cut up the fetus in order to save the mother, which is not an uncommon thing that's done in animals very often. So they simply have to cut the pieces off of the fetus, leave it inside of the mother, and then gradually pull out each piece from the womb. So in a case where you have a behema that is mekashet lelates, it's having a tough time. And when it's having a tough time, it's usually a malpresentation. And that would mean that you've got an animal, instead of being delivered in the normal way, it's going to have its feet facing forward, a leg or a hand facing forward. And in this case, it actually was able to get that much of the fetus out, but it was stuck and never went further than that. And of course, what often happens is that if there's a vet handy or a farmer who knows what he's doing, he pushes back that aver and flips around the fetus so that it will be properly presented for a birth. But meanwhile, we have a situation where hotzia ubar et yado v'zero. So now the fetus stuck out a limb of some kind, 4 foot, back foot, whatever, pulls it back into the womb, and then they were unable to deliver it. They shechted the mother in order to prevent the death of the mother and the loss of the mother. So this again, those of you are familiar with Harriet, they called Malik. And so once they did that shkita, so then the Uber was kosher. But the problem is, it doesn't say over here what's kosher. Does it mean even the aver that was pulled back, the leg or the arm that it stuck out, is that kosher? Or just the rest of it is kosher? Well, as we're going to see in Halacha Lamaisa, we'll come out from the sugya, the animal is kosher, the fetus is kosher, but the leg is treifus. And the kind of discussion we'll have later on is the whole leg treif, or is just the part that was actually sticking out treif? All of that we'll be talking about. So the Mishnah leaves open which part of it is kosher, but something is kosher, either the entire thing together with the leg that had been stuck out of the womb, or just the part up until that. But in a case where the fetus actually had a head that had gotten its way out of the womb, then it's considered to have been born. Once it's born, even though it was pushed back into the womb, hareze ki yalu, and then if you shech the mother, you cannot be matir the child in that case, because even though it happens to be inside of the womb, it's no longer viewed as a behema ba behema. It basically would be the same as taking a small animal and forcing it into a womb and then saying it's going to be kosher as a behema ba behema. But obviously that is not what's included in the natural state of the behema ba behema. Okay, Now, suppose you had to cut off some of this. As I said, that happens very often in embryectomy, where they have to cut pieces of the embryo off in order to be able to save the mother. So you cut off pieces of that fetus, and you didn't pull them out, those pieces out of the womb, and then you shechted the animal. What's the din? Well, even the pieces that are no longer alive are mutter b'achila. They are still called a behema b'behema. It doesn't say that they have to be actually a living part of the mother. It's just a behema b'behema. Do you think that that would extend even to internal organs of the mother that were left inside the mother? So let's say that we had to cut a piece of the liver off. So the mother had cancer of the liver. We cut a piece of the liver off, left it in the mother, and shechted the mother. That would not be mutter b'achila. That is not called a behema b'behema, and the mother's shchita is not going to be matir, something that was aver min achai. Because the moment that we cut that piece of liver, that piece of liver had a din of aver min achai right away. Masha inkin, a uber is not considered to be aver min achai, as long, and we'll see this in the pasuk, and as long as it's inside of the mother, it remains mutter to eat it and shecht it. And therefore, the klal is, now of course everyone's going to ask, what exactly is this klal adding? Because we've already talked about it. But anyway, this is the general klal. That something that is davar shebegufa is osir. Anything that's part of the mother's body, left inside the mother, is not going to be mutter with the shlita sa'im. But she'ena gufa, that which is part of the fetus, that is mutter, even if it's been cut off and it's just left loose in the womb. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Now here is the crucial issue. What is the din of the leg or the arm that stuck out? Because that's what this parak is really about. Is the treifus an actual status of treifus, or is the problem that the thing that was stuck out wasn't shechted? But in this case, it was brought back in and it was shechted. Was the momentary being outside of its mechitza, was that an actual treifus, as if it had been attacked by an animal and had something wrong with one of its evarim? It was drusa. And are we comparing, actually, the fact that it's in the soda to a treifa? Vaser basoda, treifa. And this animal, this fetus, is in the soda, in the absolutely abstract sense, of an area that is not surrounded by the necessary requirements for the preservation of its life, in this case biological, in other cases, as we'll see, halachically, and so on. Okay, so Rav is quoted as saying, the aver itself is never going to be mutter. That aver is for sure aser. And that is because once a treifa, always a treifa. You can't untreifa something. And it became a treifa at that moment. By taima, geomakra, ubasar, basader, treifa, lotochelu. That's it. You can't insert it and now think it's going to be kosher. Kivanchi yatsa basar, chutz lemechitza, to ne'esar. If something is outside of its context, and those are its mechitzas, whatever those are, that makes it a soda, and therefore it is treifa. We've pointed out many times, of course, the broad, abstract meaning of the word soda in Lashon HaKodesh, which is fascinatingly matched by the broad meaning of soda in English, because it's become now literally the concept of fields, in which it's possible to be mashpia, to have an effect on that field. And so the opening of the idea of being open to is what the soda means, and therefore it's not protected. Now, if something would actually be able to be completely cut off from any fields in it, so you could have something that prevents a magnetic field, an electromagnetic field, or whatever it is, then it wouldn't be possible soda. The same thing would be true over here. It's literally used fascinatingly in the same way. So now the question is, if Rav claims, at least Rav Yehuda Amar Rav here, Rav claims that once a treifa, always a treifa, and that a piece of an uber that is not in the womb is ipso facto. That makes it a treifa. Then that would mean that the foot is never going to be mutter to eat, even though the Mishnah didn't say anything about that. The Mishnah just said mutter. It didn't say the foot is usser. And therefore, we ask on Rav from the Lashon of the Mishnah. It says over here that if hotzi ha'ubar et yado, and then hichziro, it says mutar ba'achila. I mean, not normally, the way to read that would be that the mutar ba'achila, the pronoun that it is mutar to eat, the pronoun would be a reference to what was just previously mentioned, namely the foot. It brought the foot back in, mutar ba'achila. The foot is mutar ba'achila. No? I mean, that's how it reads to a naive reader. So how does Rav say that it doesn't mean the foot, my love? I mean, doesn't that mean that the aver, the foot that it stuck out, is mutar ba'achila? Actually, no, it's not what it means, says Rav. What it means is that the uber is mutar ba'achila, but ain't achinami. There's nothing that you can do to turn something that was a treifa into something that is no longer a treifa. And therefore, you cannot actually be matir that and make it kosher. It's a reference to only the fetus itself is kosher, but not any part that became a treifa. But that doesn't make any sense. Because if you're telling me that the uber is kosher, why did the Mishnah say it put the aver back in? You don't need to put the aver back in order for the uber to be kosher. I mean, what would be wrong if you wouldn't have stuck the aver back in? And it's not as if the Mishnah says, but the aver isn't kosher, in which case you could say, oh, it's coming to tell us a big chiddush, that even though it was back, it doesn't say anything about that. If anything, it's mashman the other way. So what is the point? Explain to me, if we're saying that only the uber is kosher, why do we need to put the aver back in for the uber to be kosher? This piece of the Mishnah makes no sense. So therefore, we were right in asking on Rav, look, obviously the focus in the Mishnah is on the aver, not on the uber, and it's coming to tell me that as long as I put the aver back in, that the aver is kosher and not the uber is kosher. Seems pretty clear to me, because uber, my iron is zero. Why would it say that it put it back in? It doesn't need to be put back in at all. It would be still exactly the same. So the way that you're reading the Mishnah is a reference to the uber does not make sense. Well, I'll tell you. Of course you're right. It's not necessary to put the aver back in order for it to be a kosher uber. Even if it had never put it back in, it would have been exactly the same kosher uber. Who had then afagav de lo yichziro? Makes no difference vis-a-vis the uber. But why did it say it? It said it because it wanted to talk about the case where the head was born. Remember, that was the last part of the Mishnah. In the case that it had stuck out its head, then it wouldn't be kosher anymore. The whole uber wouldn't be kosher, right? Because it would be considered to be yolud, or ezeki yolud. Therefore, since it was using a case of even if it brought the head back in, it's already considered to be born. It doesn't help to put the head back into the womb. So because of that, we use the same lashon in the reish. So I did a kavod mitna sefer. Since the last case of the Mishnah needed us to speak about a case where a head was brought back in, and nonetheless, it's not going to change the fact that this fetus was born. So I did a kavod mitna sefer, quote, unquote. So, because of that, it mentions in the Reisha as well the case, but it wasn't important. They just said, you know, keep it even. So, if it's in the Sefer, we're talking about a head that's brought back into the womb. So, in the Reisha, we talk about a foot that goes out and comes back into the womb. Fine. So, Tananareisha is zero. Unfortunately, Brucey did not welcome Richie's Island this morning because he's in the archipelago.
I tried swimming there.
But he's not on his island. He's in the midst of the archipelago over there in the Baltic. And of all crazy places to be going to that awful country, Sweden. Well, anyway.
What can you say? You got to do what you got to do.
Well, our consolations go along with you, Rich. But we're having a great time over here. Okay, so now we're justifying the language of bringing back the foot, even though it doesn't mean anything, because we're only talking about the fetus. We're not talking about the foot, right? So we're justifying it on the basis of the last case in the Mishnah that talks about bringing back the head, that it's nonetheless considered to be yavuch. But now what I don't understand is, if the entire Mishnah has been justified on the basis of the head, what exactly was the need to even tell me about the head? Sefa Maikomashvam, what is the speak Kiddush about if they brought the head back in? Is it to tell me the fact that Kivan de Yotzer Rosho Havila Leida, that once an animal, this fetus is actually gets out of the womb with its head, it's considered to be Yalud? Is that the big Kiddush? Well, I got news for you. There's a Beferish Mishnah that concentrates on precisely that issue. And that's the Mishnah coming up in Bechorot. And there's no need for this Mishnah to address that point as a sort of throwaway line that we've got at the end. This Mishnah is talking about a definition of a Bechor. And in order for us to understand that definition of a Bechor, we have to distinguish between the different types of Bechorot there are. Now, there is a Bechor, which is Chayev in Pidyon HaBen. And that's called a Peterechem. It's defined specifically as a womb opener. So it's the first viable, or first child, I shouldn't say viable, first child that goes out of the birth canal is considered to be the Peterechem. And then we've got the idea of a Yerusha Bechor, who gets double upon the death of his father. And that has nothing to do with being a Peterechem. That has to do with Reshit Ono. Now, the question is, what does the word Reshit Ono mean? Well, On has two different meanings. On means virility. So this is Reshit Ono in the sense of it's being the first of his seed, so to speak. And Reshit Ono, as all of our missing friends from South Africa can tell us, oh man, that Benoni is a nice suburb, which is called Benoni because it's named after Benoni Binyamin. And that is the sad place. And it turned out to be rather a sad place indeed, unfortunately. But anyway, but Benoni, it means that On also has the meaning of Aninut, misery. And that is a double meaning that actually defines the relationship of father and child that creates a Bechor. And that is the death of this child will cause the father to be in a state of aninut, he will be sad. Now, in a case where the father will be very happy to get rid of this kid, so let's say it's some type of awful mutation that never would have been able to live anyway and so on, that's not called a reshit ono, because he couldn't care less, and it's not on. So there's entirely different issues that are involved in the definition of a bechor lenachala versus a bechor lekohen, which means a Bechor that requires pidyon. So let's take that into account. Let us take a look at the Mishnah in Bechorot, and then we'll see why there's no need for this Mishnah. It says over there, Ezehu Bechor lenachala, ye'eno Bechor lekohanim. So how could a Bechor be a proper Bechor in terms of inheritance, but not be a Bechor that requires a pidyon? Is that possible? Yes, very easily possible. Suppose you have a viable child that is born after a miscarriage. Well, the miscarriage already forced open the womb, and because of that, the next viable child that's born is not a womb opener. So even though, if it came after Nephilim, even though that Nephel had gotten out alive, the head of it had gotten out alive before it died in the course of its birth, it isn't viable, and therefore is not considered to be the Bechor. It's not going to make any difference to the child that the father will care about whenever that child is born, that may be the next child or whatever, whenever he has a viable child. That what it does do, however, is since it opens the womb and it never reaches the Shloshim Yom of the Chiyuv of Pinyan Bechor without its having been dying in the course of those 30 days, so then it's not going to be mechuyev in Pidyon HaBen, but it will be mechuyev, it will be enough to make the next one not a Bechor LeKohen. So even though it was Yotzer Rosh Chai, or maybe it's a full-term fetus, and it died in the course of delivery, maybe it was strangled by its cord, and it was Yotzer Rosh mate, and it was never born, therefore, because its head was never delivered alive. So then that would again mean that it's exactly the same situation. This is a stillborn, and the next child is going to be a Bechor L'Nachala. The first child is not a Bechor L'Nachala because his father didn't worry about him ever, and it's not a Bechor for a Kohen because it didn't survive. And the next one is not the Peter Rechem. So that would mean Afal Pishi Yatzar Rosh Chai, or if it was a Nephel that was dead at the time of delivery, and therefore there never was a live delivery. But this means, the Mishnah is saying, only because it was dead upon arrival, right? That is why it's considered to be the one afterwards is considered to be the Bechor L'Nachala. But what if the first one would have been born alive? A Rosh Chai, once that head was delivered, Haba Acharav, the next one wouldn't have been the firstborn. Even Legabe Nachala, it wouldn't be considered to be the first one. So even though it was only a head that was born, exactly. So you see from here that a head that emerges is considered to be the definition of birth, unless it was dead when it would emerge, right? So why does our Mishnah have to tell us that the emergence of the head is considered to be Yolud? Of course it's considered to be Yolud. That's what the whole Mishnah is saying in Bechoras. Now, there's a simple answer that I know you're going to try. Okay? You're going to tell me that Mishnah is talking about the din of humans. It was talking about a Bechor LeKohen. It was talking about a Bechor LeAv. But this Mishnah is talking about other mammals. It's referring to animals that were born in terms of kashrus. And maybe it's not the same. Maybe that Mishnah of the Chorus told us the din of an Adam, and our Mishnah is telling us the din of a behemah, and you can't learn one from the other, because an Adam be behemah lo yalif, and that's because there is no prosdor in a behemah. Now, the point over here is that the way that humans deliver children is through a vaginal opening that is covered over with two thighs on either side. And therefore, when you deliver a child, that child is coming through what's an extended hall, so to speak, because the womb does not open up on the outside of the body. It opens up all covered over with the thighs of the body. Masha Enkein, if you take a look at any of these mammals that we're talking about, you look at their rear end, and basically you're looking at the opening of their womb straight out without anything at all. And that animal just pops out into the hands of the vet, and there's no legs in the way, there's no thighs in the way, and you're looking at the opening of the womb directly when you're looking at the animal's rear, right? So that means that because of that, you cannot learn an Adam from the din of a behemah, because there is no prosdor la behemah. There's no long hallway for the child to get out. And therefore, if the Mishnah told me what the din is about a behemah, And it would say, well, as soon as the head comes out, it's considered to be born. Yeah, that's in an animal. Where any two-year-old can immediately see, oh, there it is, there's the head. But when you're talking about a human, who's going to see the head? Well, you're going to have to be basically on a special kind of chair and holding these legs apart and so on. And then the nurse, the delivery woman or the doctor is going to tell you, oh, yes, okay, the head is out and so on, right? But maybe, therefore, the head of a behemoth is very noticeable. But in the birth of an Adam, maybe it's not enough. And the other way around, we can't learn. Because if I know the din of an Adam, I still don't know what the din would be with a behemoth. Because who said that the head of an animal is particularly chashuv? I mean, humans relate to the entire value of the human as their head. You know, but a chicken without a head is still a perfectly good chicken. And maybe a cow without a head is a perfectly good cow. I mean, heck, people are running around all the time like chickens without heads. And therefore, it could be that maybe the head wouldn't be considered to be so chashuv of a leida in the event that it's not human. I know that's what you're going to tell me, but it doesn't help you one bit. Why? Because I got another mission up my sleeve. And the other Mishnah actually tells me the din of the behemah directly, because I've got another Mishnah later on, and we're going to have that in the next couple of weeks. And that is that in a case where you have a shiliyah shiyatzta miktzata, so now you've got the amniotic sac, and this amniotic sac only is formed if there was a fetus. There's no such thing as a mother forming an amniotic sac when there's nothing inside of it. That doesn't mean that you're going to find anything inside of it, however, because through all types of circumstances and exposure to trauma of different kinds, the fetus that was in this amniotic sac may have completely disintegrated. And all that is left to show you that there was a pregnancy is the fact that this amniotic sac is finally delivered, but there's nothing in it. It just seems to have fluid in it, nothing else. So what's the din over there? So the Mishnah says any part of a shiliyah that actually was delivered, you have to be concerned that the invisible fetus, which definitely exists, the cells of that fetus are here somewhere. You just can't find them until you go through it, the whole thing microscopically. So therefore, you have to be choshesh that the part of the fetus, which was the head, and remember, I mean, this may have been a fetus the size of a button. You know, I mean, there's nothing that you're going to be able to see. And now there's nothing at all. So then you would actually be in a position of needing to be concerned for the possibility of this piece containing the head. And therefore, everything here is asur b'achila, even anything that was left inside of the womb at the time of the shechita, it would not be kosher, because how do you know that it wasn't already born? And the reason for this is, Kisiman vlad beisha, kach siman vlad behema. There's no way, as we know in the dinim of tumas leida by the hilchos humans of amniotic sacs, the same way that a human, it's 100% never going to present a shilya without a vlad. The same thing is true in a behema. Kach siman behema, and the whole idea of answering it at that point, no matter what came out, is because we're concerned that the part of the fetus that was the head was actually in that part of the sac. So that means we've already established that a head, without any chashivas to it, of a behema that's invisible because of its disintegration, is still considered to be a proper leida. So now, I ask you, please be honest. Why the heck did the Mishnah talk about bringing its leg back in? And don't give me this stuff. Well, because it was important to say the last part of the Mishnah, bringing the head back in. It wasn't important to say bringing the head back in, okay? So what was the only part of the Mishnah that was a Chiddush was Dafka, the part about bringing the leg back in. And it was coming to tell me that you might have thought that it was permanently trefa because it stuck out. Kamash Malan, if you brought it back in, it is kosher. Exactly the opposite of Rav, and there's no other way to run the Mishnah, and QED. Rav is wrong. Ha! So, because here's how to prove that. If you're going to tell me that the whole point was that the Mishnah was teaching me that since it was pulled back in, it's now kosher. Ah, now I understand this Mishnah. And why did it mention the head business at the end? Because it mentioned the foot business at the beginning. But it wasn't really important because I know it from the Mishnah later on. But if you're going to tell me I don't need the ratio with the foot because the foot isn't kosher, so what's the Mishnah saying? Well, we don't need the ratio. Okay, fine. We need the sefer. No, we don't need the sefer. We don't need the sefer. So why are we talking about this? Iam at lo resha dafka, velo sefer dafka. Why are we talking about pulling things back in? Lama le mitnaye klal. Why do we need to bring it in? Therefore, the only chiddush that this Mishnah could be telling me, Rav, is the fact that the leg is kosher. That's the point. And therefore, if you pull it back in, even the leg is kosher. Not only the fetus is kosher. That's how to read it. No, says Rav, not true. It's actually talking about only the fetus. Now, you want to know why it talks about the leg? I'll tell you why. This is not my answer. This is actually a chiddush that was said by Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. It wasn't said on this question. It was said on a similar question that we're going to find later on in a braita, but Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak's answer to that braita, which we'll reach later, is going to be the correct answer for the Mishnah as well. And here's what Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said, essentially with the same issue. He said the chiddush of the Mishnah about being pulled in is to teach me the din of the mekom achatach. It's only there to teach me the halacha of the spot where you sliced off the piece that had been sticking out. That's the point. And therefore, the chiddush is like this. You've got this leg sticking out. It's sticking out of the womb. Okay, now you take a knife, let's say, and you cut the piece that is right sticking out, and you cut it right up against the opening of the wound, right? And that way, when it pulls the leg back in, it's already been amputated. But the place where it was cut is now inside of the wound. And therefore, it becomes a behema ba behema. So the chiddush is, I want to tell you that everything inside is kosher. That's what I want to tell you. So therefore, what it's saying over here is that the point that if I had cut it, this would have been the surface of the cut, that even that area, if it pulls the leg back, that is mutter with the shchita, but if not, it's not mutter with the shchita, not because it was a trefa, but because it wasn't surrounded by the womb at the time, because it was right at the opening. And only a behema, ba behema is mutter, you see? So it's not so simple that there's only a binary issue here. Is the fetus kosher or is the leg kosher? A leg's definitely not kosher. You forgot that there's another issue. The leg being kosher, that's a function of the dinim of tarfus. And the tarfus, says Rav, never gets fixed. But the question of whether the point of cutting, the mokum chatach, if that being kosher, has nothing to do with tarfus because it never left the womb. So what then is the question? Is it in the womb? Because in order to be in the womb, to be kosher with the shchita of the mother, not because of tarfus, but because of the other question of what is a behema, ba behema, it has to be fully ba behema. But if it would be all the way up against the opening of the womb, it wouldn't be surrounded by womb, and therefore it wouldn't be Babahema. You see? So it turns out that the two issues that we needed in the introduction to the Mishnah, both of them turn out, according to Rabbi Nachman by Yitzchak, to be functionally important to the whole structure of the Mishnah. Lovely. So now we know why we're talking about pulling the leg in. Not that it has anything to do with the tarfus. Once a trefa, always a trefa, says Rav. But it would have to do with whether you can eat everything but the trefas. That's the point. Okay, great. So that means Rav, meanwhile, is holding his own against all comers. Well, Tashma, we got another problem for Rav to handle. Let's take a look at this problem. Tashma, Behema Mekasher Leled. Yes, here we got the Braita. Braita actually parallels our Mishnah. Hotzi Ubarat Yado V'Yigzira. And then you were Shochet the mother. It, again, it. What is the it? It is Mutar Ba'Achila, like our Mishnah says. And it would be Mutar Ba'Achila. But suppose you Shechted mommy. And then it brought back the leg. Ah, now this is an addition. Then it would be Usher Bachila. Aha. Oh, this sounds very bad for Rav. Very bad. Because in this case, it is clearly talking about the leg, right? And it's saying it would be Usher Bachila only if it was shechted while it was out. So therefore, it's now an Avela because it was never shechted with the mother. And it was in a position and not to be able to have a shechit. How are you going to shecht it after the rest of it was shechted? Hotzi et yado v'chatacho. Suppose you cut off the leg, and then you shechted the mother. So then the part that you cut off that was outside is tame, because it's Eivor min Achai, and the din of Eivor min Achai is that it's metame like an avela. So that part is tame. But the part that's inside, that part was shechted, and that part is tahor, because I cut it off while it was alive, and something alive is not mekabel tuma. So at that point, it was not called food, and therefore wasn't able to be mekabel tuma from the piece of it which had a din of an avela. But suppose you shechted the mother, and then you went ahead and you cut off the leg that had been sticking out. So then you're going to have a problem because the shechita actually had no impact on that leg. So that leg is always going to be tameh as if it's an Eivor min Achai without shechting, right? So for all intents and purposes, it is currently a nevela at this moment. And the shechita didn't help it because it was actually, even though it was still attached, the shechita doesn't help it because it wasn't in the behemah. So it wasn't behemah, ba-behemah. And therefore, at the time that I cut off this leg, I had already shechted the mother, which means it had a din of food. And if it had a din of food, then it's going to be mekabel tuma from the part of it that is touching the unkosher part. And therefore, what's its din? It's not an avela, but it's maga avela. It's something that came in contact with an avela, divrei Rebbe Meir. Whereas the Chachamim say, well, it's not an avela. It's basically, since it's still there, it's not an avela, even though I can't eat it. It's the equivalent of a trefa that I shechted. And a trefa that is shechted is not metame bin avela. And therefore, it's a maga trefa shvuta. Okay, fine. But in any event, what does it say over here in the Braita? It says, beferish. Hotzi ubar et yado v'irzira. And there it's got to be talking about the actual aver, as we saw, because if you didn't leave it in, then we talked about it's not being kosher. Mutar b'achila, isn't that talking about the aver? No, it's talking about the uber. Ah, get out of here. It can't mean that here. What do you mean it's talking about the uber? Read the rest of it, for heaven's sakes. That's why I brought you the Braita. Look at the rest of it. Yeah, Uber, look at the Seifa. If first you shechted the mother, and then it brought it in, then and only then it's Usher Bachila. How do you read that? If it's talking about the Uber, why is it Usher Bachila? You shechted the mother, the Uber is kosher whether you brought the leg back in or you didn't. So it obviously can only be talking about the leg. Ha! Well, this shows that Rav is wrong. And here, too, we have Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak. Now, this is not the Braita that he said it on. We'll get to that Braita. But we have Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak saying, you are making the mistake of thinking that there's only two issues. Either we're talking about the leg, or we're talking about the Uber. But that is a gross oversimplification, because there's a different thing to worry about, namely, the Mekom HaChatach. And that is what it's referring to over here, when it says it is not the Uber, and it is not the mother. It is the Mekom HaChatach. That's the point. So if it was out at the time of the Shechita, the Mekom HaChatach is Otzer, because the Shechita was not of a Behema, Ba Behema, because the part that was the edge was at the edge, and it wasn't surrounded by womb. And therefore, it's what we're referring to, Lo Nitzcha, El Lamekom HaChatach. Here, too, it's the same answer that Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak said, the same answer that we used on the previous Braita, follows with this Braita. We are talking about the Mekom HaChatach. But the whole thing doesn't make sense. I just can't believe what Rav is saying. You're telling me that even though I understand you're answering all of this, okay, but I've got another problem. If you're claiming that if I bring the aver that was sticking out back in, once a trefa, always a trefa. That's what you're saying, Rav said. So how do you explain the fact that when Avimi came back from Beit Hazoi, maybe some people go to Beit Hazoi to bring back walletfuls of cash with all the stuff that they sold in Beit Hazoi, but Avimi brought back a braita with him, which was worth much more. And what the Braita said was, what do you think he was carrying in his hands? He was carrying a Braita. And the Braita said like this. This is a strange Braita. Parasa hichzir echol. Parasot hichzir echol. What? We need to interpret the very opaque meaning of this Braita. Now, anybody who's familiar with the pasuk of Behema Ba Behema will immediately know what this is talking about. So let us now look more closely at that pasuk so that we can understand it. Listen to this. V'chol Behema. Are you able to listen with all that water running down that faucet, Mr. Gavi? All right. I hope so. You're pretty darn good. What can I say? So the pasuk goes like this. V'chol behema, mafreset parsa, v'shosat shesa, shtei pirasot ma'ale geira ba'behema. That's the big pasuk that tells us the simonim of kosher mammals, right? And it starts with v'chol behema and goes on to say ba'behema otatochel. So our big drasha is from taking the first word v'chol behema, skipping over the various dinim of Nafreset Parsa, Shasat Shasa, Maled Yirah, let's skip that. The bottom line is, it says over here, Ba Behema at the end, and it said, V'cho Behema, Ba Behema, Otatochelu, right? Now, question is, how do we relate the issue of the Mafreset Parsa, Shasat Shasa, Shtei Pirasot? Now, this is saying, if we read it literally, it's saying, if you find a behema that is kosher inside of the mother, then you can eat it. But if the behema that you find is not kosher, then you can't eat it, right? So in other words, if it's a mutation, it seems to be saying, if it's a mutation, and it doesn't have mafreset parasavish or saches ashte parasod, that then you would not be able to eat it, even though it was inside of the mother. That's what it seems to be saying. But if we've got two words, we've got chol behema mafreset parsa, And then it goes on to say, Vishosat Shesa Shte Parasot. I think, now what this means is, there are times that one parsa is kosher, and there are times when all the parasot are kosher. So how is that? How are there times when the whole uber together with all of its parasot are kosher? And when would be the time when the uber is kosher, but not with all of its parasot? Ah, I will tell you, it's very simple. Any part that was inside of the bema, ba-behema, is kosher, which would mean that if it pulled back one hoof after sticking out both legs in the midst of this malpresentation, so it sticks out both legs, one of these parasot is brought back in. That one is kosher. If it's parasot and it brought back in both hooves, then both of them are kosher, right? So there you go. So the pasuk is telling me, any part that was inside, behema, ba behema, is the kosher part. Any part that was outside is the not kosher part. But according to Rav, this makes no sense. Because according to Rav, once it was stuck out, I don't care what you brought back in, the part that you brought back in was not kosher. So how does Rav explain this braita? He can't argue on this braita. Answers the Gemara, it's not what it means. It means if you bring back the parasa, you can eat the fetus. No, come on, I already explained to you that's absurd. Because if it's coming to tell me about the uber, why does it say if you brought it back, even if you didn't bring it back? That's crazy. We said already that this is a ridiculous answer. So then I feel it low as your nami. This is where Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak gave his famous answer. At last we get to the Mokar. Omer Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak, this is not talking about the foot, and it's not talking about the uber either. It's your oversimplification that has wrecked your mind. It's talking about the Mokam Chatach, in which there's no din of treifas, but there is a din of Bema Babema, and the part that's up against the opening of the womb is not Babema. But, no. Because, why is it bringing two psukim, one of which talks about Parsa, and then the next one talks about parasod, and it's telling me, depending on what it is that you brought in, that has nothing to do with the mokum achatach. The place where you cut it has nothing to do with whether it was one parasod or two parasod. Get out of here. This is clearly not talking about that case. It's talking about whatever you brought in is kosher, and whatever you didn't bring in isn't kosher, no? No. There's two completely different, beautiful limudim over here. We need a limud to teach me the din of a mutation. Now, here's what it means. One of these psukim is there to tell me that anything that was brought back in, the mokum chatach is mutter. But the other one is coming to tell me that a kalut b'me'e para is kosher if it was shechted in the case where the mother was shechted and it was in the womb, which is called a ben beku'a. So it's the inside of the womb when it was shechted. And it's coming to tell me that if there's a mutation, now, what's the din of the mutation? So according to Rebbe Shimon, then this whole thing only will work out as a chiddush, I'll leave it to Rebbe Shimon. What's the matter? You getting bored? What's the matter? It's getting too complicated that you drop out? Dropouts? For heaven's sakes, this is fantastic stuff. Problem is, you can't even talk to the dropouts because it says Otsi Parasot and it only brings in a parasa. The other one isn't kosher and that one's gone. Should have talked about it before the other parasa disappeared. Anyway, so I'll leave it to Rebbe Shimon. Rebbe Shimon says, if you have a mutation born to a perfectly kosher cow, and the child does not have the simonim of the parasot that are kosher, you can't eat that child. That is called kalut ben para. So a kalut means a joined hoof that was born out of a cow is not a cow. And it's not kosher. It's a mutation. So now the chiddush is, what about if that mutation was found in the womb of the cow after the cow was shechted? That's what the pasuk is coming to tell me. That even if it's not shosat, shesat, it's just a parasa, it's not parasot. So, when did Rabbi Shimon say that that mutation is usur? That's only if it was actually born. But if I shechted the mother, it doesn't matter what the fetus looks like, because here it's being hukshar through being part of the mother. And therefore, that's the chiddush of the pasuk. That even when Rabbi Shimon said that mutations are usur, it's not in a case where it was inside the mother. So therefore, the parasa that it pulled back in is not talking about pulling it back in after it stuck it out. It's talking about a parasa that was still in at the time of Shita. That's the point. That's only needed aliba to Rabbi Shimon. Because as we're going to see, the Chachomim are matir mutations. Fine. So now, Rav seems to be all in the clear. We've answered all of the challenges to Rav. Now we find out that not everybody agrees with Rav. And it turns out that Ula quotes Rabbi Yochanan as disagreeing fundamentally with this whole idea of once a treifa, always a treifa, but no gea, a basar besada. And Ula on Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the meaning of the Mishnah is that the Aver itself is mutter, and the Uber for sure is mutter. So Rabbi Yehuda said to Ula, don't you know that Rav and Shmuel both said the Aver is usser and it's only referring to the Uber? And you're going to argue on both Rav and Shmuel? Ula, that's what you're going to do? Amar Lay, so Ula said to Rabbi Yehuda, look, Chas v'sholom, I have to tell you that I am so much Rav and Shmuel that if I even had a little bit of the dust that remains of their bodies, I would fill my eyes with it so I could learn to see. You know? I would never dream of personally arguing on Rav and Shmuel. But Rav Yochanan said, the pasuk, he said, HaKol HaYu Bichlau Basar Besada Treifa Lo Tochelo. It says in the pasuk, anything which is basar besada treifa, don't eat it. And then, which would mean, once it went out of its natural area, you can't eat it. But then, look what happens. There's one of these situations in which a korban chatas was yotza chutz l'mechitzato. Now, this is another example. A korban chatas, you see, is this not wonderful? A korban chatas leaving the azara is exactly like a fetus that sticks out its foot. Now you try to tell this to somebody normal. This requires a completely abstracted modality. The Gemara just takes it for granted. Well, obviously, a chatas that goes outside of the azara is the same thing as a fetus that sticks out its foot, right? Now, we know in the Torah that it says, beferish, that that is us. And it doesn't rely on the fact that it says, basar besada treifa. Oh, no. It's only because Moshe Rabbeinu yells at Bnei Aaron when he finds that they didn't actually take care of the soyer of Rosh Chodesh. So that's where he goes to town. And when Moshe Rabbeinu goes to town, every word teaches you a halacha, right? So he says to them, "Hein lo huvatam el hakodesh pnima, ochol tochlu oto bakodesh kasher tziveitis." We learn not every word. But, oh, so in other words, he must have asked, well, was the dam of the chatas brought in? That would have passed it. No, they said, ma pitom it was brought in. It was in the mokum where it belonged. So then, Perhaps it was Yotzei Chutz? No, it was Bakodesh. So then you should have eaten it. Why did he have to teach us? Maybe it went out, it would be Nifsal B'Yotzei. I don't need you to tell me that. It's a pasuk that says, Basar B'Sada Trefa Lo Tochelu. So since Moshe Rabbeinu had to teach us the din, when he was talking to Moshe, and Moshe was talking to Aaron Uvana, and he had to tell them that it would be understandable that you burnt the Sayer Shel Rosh Chodesh, which is a chatas, if it was Yotzei Chutz L'Azara. So then we learn from that, that only the special case of the chatas, that becomes permanently a trefa when it goes out. And that's what he's stressing. The other things, if they would have been brought back in, would have been kosher. Only the chatas, when the chatas goes out, that becomes an indelible trefa. But all other things that are only out of a mechitza that's biological, that can be restored by putting it back into the womb. So that would mean Rabbi Yochanan is bedayak in the pasuk that a biological mechitza, kivan dahador shari, as opposed to a halachic trefa, which would be the chatas, it was Yotzei Chutz L'Mekomo, a leg that was Yotzei Chutz L'Mekomo when brought back in, would become mutter again. That's what Rabbi Yochanan taught from the pasuk. Now, how am I supposed to deny Rabbi Yochanan's pasuk? What do you say about that? So this is a true problem for Rav, isn't it? No. Makes no sense. Says the Gemara, we'll show you that you're wrong. Nesvei. Take a look at this price. Basar basateh trefa lo tochelu. Why is it telling us over here that something is the field? A field makes something trefa? And why does that not follow simply by the word trefa? I'll tell you why. Because, my dear friend, what about the fact that you're only allowed to eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, huh? What about the fact that you're only allowed to eat Bikurim in Yerushalayim? Now, suppose you took your Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. Aha! Will it become trefa? That's the question. Will your Bikuri become trefa? Well, we know that it says in the pasuk that it does not become trefa. That's the problem. Since we see that even I would have thought that if you take Maaser Sheni out of Yerushalayim, you bring it back in, we have a beferisha remez in the pasuk that we're going to see, that they become kosher again, and leaving their mechitza, which was Yerushalayim, did not turn them into permanent trefas. So if that's the case, I would have thought, so then the basar basada should be exactly the same. And in the case that you had a leg that was stuck out from a womb, it's no different than Maaser Sheni that leaves Yerushalayim. Oh, come on, how can you not think? This is wild stuff. So now the only question is, how deeply do we define mechitza? Okay, so I would have said, well, if this is a mechitza for eating something, that makes it a valid mechitza. Albeit it's only a din in where you can eat it, but maybe that's a reflection of the actual kashrus of this thing, not where you're allowed to eat, right? So I would have thought, okay, so then maybe that's the way we should look at all such cases. So Yochol Avzekin, I might have thought that Basir Besada is no different. If it was brought back in and the Aver that stuck out was able to come back in, I would have thought it becomes kosher the same way that Maaser Sheni becomes kosher in Yerushalayim. I'm telling you, you try to explain this to somebody. What are you talking about? So I would have thought it becomes kosher like Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. Talmud Lomar, that's why it says Basar Basada Trefa. Well, how do I learn from there? It says Rabbi, what do you mean, how do I learn from there? It's calling it a Trefa. Can you make a Trefa kosher again? Ma Trefa Kima Chenitrefa. Once it got that din of Trefa, it's a din of Trefa. Shuv Ein La Heter, there's no way of turning it back. Therefore, af baser besada, kiva shiatza chutzla mechitzato, shuvein lo heter. Ti yufta deula. It says here beferish. An eva that was stuck out of a womb is baser besada trefa forever. Ay, 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 ti yufta. Indeed, that blows the argument against Rav out of the water, and Rabbi Yochanan does not have a leg to stand on, or even a foreleg. What do you say about that? Omar, I'm interested in why you took all of that for granted. I mean, I took your word for it, but can we go back and explain it to me? You said, since we find the Fisher Matsino Meiser Shani and Bikurim and Koshri if they come out of Yerushalayim, where exactly did we find that? Oh, happy that you asked. Echan Matsino, Dichti, Lo Tuchalechol Pisharechem Hasardigan Chavetirosh Chavetzarechov Chorot Pikor Chavetzonecha Vecholdin Arecha Asherti Dorvinid Votecha Utrumat Yadecha. Anyway, you can't eat it Bisharecha. So, okay, so then the Masar de Gandhati Roshavi Yitzarecha, you cannot eat in your own areas, Bisharecha Udalotechol. If you bring it into your own cities, you can't eat it. You have to be in Yerushalayim. So that's telling me the Isser is eating it, Bisharecha, not the fact that it was in Bisharecha. So if it's not Bisharecha, this is a din in Achila. If it's a din in Achila, then you're in Yerushalayim and you're not Bisharecha, then you can eat it. Bisharecha u delotecho. Avo, yatsu chutzu mechitzato v'chazru, then you would be able to eat it. So now the question is, why did I need that pasuk by the Chatas? I'll tell you why, my dear friend. Read the rest of the pasuk, for heaven's sakes. It doesn't only talk about Meiser Sheni and Bikurim. It talks beferish about Bechorot, Bechorchav, Etzonecha, and it talks about the Kol Nidarecha, V'nidvotecha. I mean, come on, man. So then that means that there's no din of Baser Kodesh that was Yatzo Chutz L'Mechitzaso either. If it doesn't apply to the Ma'asar de Gandchati Roshavi Yitzarecha, why would it apply as a trefas in the Kol Nidvotecha? I don't understand. So you're basically showing me that your diak from the pasuk is wrong, because you yourself said that you certainly can't eat Baser Kodesh that was Yatzo Chutz L'Mechitzaso. Elamai. When the Pasuk restated the Din of Chatas, where did it restate the Din of Chatas? Moshe Rabbeinu restated it when he was yelling at Aaron Uvanav. So he was coming to tell me that those things are indeed Aser. And anything similar to Chatas is Aser. But those things that are Adin and Lotuchal Le'echol in Meiser and in Bikurim are not similar to the Korban of a Chatas. And therefore, it's dafka bisharecha, but in other cases, you would be able to. Whew. Anyway, we've got an awful lot of exciting things that we did today. And okay, we've got some variations on the theme tomorrow, which are actually very, very beautiful. But I have run out of time today, and I hope that you're not upset at perhaps overly explaining it. But what can you do? It's so much fun. And once you get it straight, it's like riding a bicycle. You'll have it for life. Go to everyone and have a great grand day. Don't forget to chazer along with Richie. Yeah, as Richie still does. Just as Richie will be chazering over 40 times today as he passes by all these parts of the archipelago, he will also be chazering the daf, one for each island. Don't forget to join Richie in 40 Chazorot. See you, everyone. Have a wonderful grand day.